Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to the show. We have some great guests this week, starting off with acupuncturist Stephanie Binette, who's going to explain the ins and outs of acupuncture and if this is something that can really help you recover from an injury or a condition like migraines, fatigue, carpal tunnel, to name a few. We then speak with marketing expert Monique Reese about the importance of a healthy corporate culture so that your work environment is a productive and enjoyable place to be. Gina Lee of The Love Zone is here, and we wrap things up with a new remix from Jennifer Lopez, Dance Again.
Capture your need for sound.
Something that is often talked about but maybe not entirely understood is the practice of acupuncture. Personally, I had heard of the practice for many years, but all that really came to mind if someone brought it up was picturing a person looking like a human pin cushion. That picture all changed for me actually when I was told that I should try it out because I hurt my wrists in martial arts and the pain would not go away. So basically, off I went with an open mind, but not really much hope because I had been in chronic pain for well over a year. Well, suffice it to say that I am now a believer after the terrible discomfort that I was in actually has left me, which is just amazing to me. But I don't just want you to take my word for it. Joining us on the show is certified acupuncturist Stephanie Binette of Clinic Holistic Zen from the West Island of Montreal. Stephanie is actually a member of the Order of Acupuncturists of Quebec and also teaches traditional Chinese medicine at the Natural Health Consultants Institute and treats patients of all ages. Stephanie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you for having me.
Stephanie, why did you decide to get involved in acupuncture, and how much education and training is needed to do what you do?
Basically, there's only one school in Quebec. It's the Collège Rosemont in Montreal. It's the only three-year course that certifies an acupuncturist to be practicing here in our province. What got me into it was I really wanted to develop the holistic approach. I initially wanted to be a doctor, and when I was introduced to Chinese medicine, I just loved the body, mind, spirit consideration. And that's really what pushed me to change a little bit my orientation.
And so how many years months or years did it take you to get to where you are now?
In terms of my practice or the schooling?
In terms of schooling, I guess.
Schooling is a three-year program in Montreal, and that's the only school in Quebec.
Now, can you actually explain what acupuncture really is? Because I think a lot of people, you know, you hear of it, but you don't really understand exactly what is involved.
So acupuncture is an energy medicine. We talk a lot about the qi, which is the energy that circulates through our bodies. And this qi we know exists throughout our everyday life. We know opposing poles on a magnet will attract. We feel the attraction. We know that north and north will repel. And you don't see the energy, but you do feel it in your hands if you're holding magnets. So the energy will circulate in our body, and if it does it correctly, we'll be healthy, and when it doesn't, then we'll have a whole slew of symptoms that can occur.
Now, can you explain, I guess, the needles? Because I think a lot of people are just terrified of the needles.
Yeah, I get that a lot. A lot of patients, first-time patients, will come in my office and say, this is all it is. I wish I came here a long time ago. The fear of needles does stop a lot of patients from coming in. And really, they're tiny hair-like wires that we like to call. I often treat a lot of babies, and they'll just sleep through the treatment. There's little or no discomfort at all. And the fear, I think, just originates from maybe dentists or going to the doctors for vaccinations. But in those needles, we can often fit between 20 to 40 of our needles just in the tip of those dermic needles.
And can you explain, actually, Stephanie, what the needles do? Because, again, I think people don't understand what it does to help you.
So because we have channels in our body, they're main meridians that we call, there are acupuncture points on those meridians. So when we actually insert the needle or the wire into those points, then we have the central nervous system act on that activation of the point. And then we can explain it in easier terms as creating a micro lesion in the body as the little wire goes through, and then the central nervous system acts and releases endorphins to the point of area if it's for pain, for example. But depending on the use of the points, depending how we needle them and which combination of points we use, then that's what the body will do. So certain points, let's say on the hand, can act for allergies, can help for headaches, can help for immune system, and etc. But depending which other point we combine it with, then the body will be smart enough to know how to act.
And how deep do you actually put the needles in, Stephanie?
We're a millimeter through the skin, not very deep at all. There was actually a German research published a few years back that wanted to determine whether or not the size of the needle mattered on better results, or if the depth of puncture also had a better impact on treatment. They all came back negative. So you can actually needle very superficially with a very small wire and have great results.
And can you explain the other tools that you use aside from the needles? Because I know, for example, I've had, you know, cupping used on me.
Yes. So there are different ways to treat different other techniques to use. You can activate a point with a needle, with a laser, with a moxa. So if we talk about cupping, is also a technique using to suction different areas of the body to either activate acupuncture points, if we're talking about colds, for example, or just to relieve tense muscle. So by suctioning the muscle just a little bit through a cup, we're lifting and separating the different muscle layers, allowing for better blood flow to nourish the muscles. And that's when tense muscles are tense, is that they're not being nourished and they just keep getting worse and worse.
And with regards to the moxa, because I've been using that as, I guess, a post-treatment to when I've got the needlework done, what does that do, or does that enhance the needlework?
That's right. So the acupuncture points, once they're activated, are active for 24 hours. So oftentimes we'll send the patient home with a moxa where they can continue activating certain points. Heat acts as a conductor, helps increase the energy flow, the circulation in certain areas. So it's really great in pains, anywhere, for a lot of different conditions. We use it in pain that needs to move, if there's a lot of stagnation, but we'll also give moxas in different pathologies, such as fertility, to help activate the kidney points, the kidney meridians, to increase fertility rates.
With regards to the, the moxa, you know, and then using it after the needlework, how important, if, you know, you prescribe that, is it for the patient to actually do what you say, like to do the homework?
My patients should always do their homework. I mean, it's not dramatic. If anything, it's just going to help accelerate the treatments. I always like to get my patients in and out as soon as they can. We want the patients, we want the treatments to be as effective as possible. So, yes, doing the homework at home does help a lot. And it helps teach the body what it's supposed to do without the needles. We don't want our patients in once a week, every week for the rest of their lives. We actually want to help the body be able to sustain the treatments, to be able to do what the actual treatments are doing on their own.
And what about the Chinese patches? Because I've also used those.
There are different patches out there. I do tend to use a specific type for muscle release, for, again, keeping our points active longer, for headaches. We use them also for headaches and et cetera. So it really depends on the reason of consultation why you would have had those patches.
Okay. Joining us on the show is Stephanie Binette, again, an acupuncturist from Clinic Holistic Zen in the West Island of Montreal. Stephanie, what ailments can you actually treat with acupuncture? Because, again, I think that's something that not a lot of people are sure of what, you know, what can actually help them.
Yeah, there's so many reasons of consultation. It's actually hard to name them all. But generally, I mean, we obviously don't do open heart surgery. We don't put bones back together, but even in those cases, we would help with inflammation and pain relief. So there's very little that we cannot have an action on, but there's the general disorders such as fatigue, anxiety, migraines, pains, all types of pains, from neck pain to back pain, sciatica, fibromyalgia, injuries, arthritis. There's many to note, but we also act on the endocrine system, so any menopausal women out there, hot flashes, insomnia, fertility issues. This time of year is big on allergies, of course, with the spring coming in, with a lot of mold, grass, trees, pollen allergies. And obviously with my training at LaSalle Hospital and my obstetrical gynecology patients, it's been more fertility issues, pregnancy, so anything from heartburn, from nausea, from carpal tunnel. There's just so many to note.
Can you actually expand on, because you just mentioned the pregnant women, mm-hmm. what can you actually do to help them? Because I noticed that, you know, specifically with you, you can do stuff, you know, pre-birth and post-birth. So what does that involve?
Yeah, well, the pre-birth, I guess, well, it depends. There's obviously the infertility issues that we have a lot in our society. But once the woman is pregnant, we do help a lot for the first trimester. We do a lot of high-risk pregnancies, so women who miscarry. We actually have points to hold pregnancies. All the symptoms when somebody is healthily pregnant, with nausea, fatigue, back pain, vomiting, all those can be addressed as well. I spoke about carpal tunnel before. That's also something that can happen, sinus congestions with pregnancy as well. And post-pregnancy, we also deal with postpartum depression, lactation issues, hemorrhoids, prolapse, bladder, uterine, etc. And in the last 5 weeks of pregnancy is also important to do the preparation of birth. So we use points to help elasticize perineum, to avoid tears, to ensure that the mommy and baby are ready to come out.
Can you also talk a bit as well, because you mentioned about headaches and migraines, because there are so many people that suffer, you know, from that, which is just horrible, because I hate when I get a regular headache, and I can't imagine people that actually, you know, suffer migraines. And I think it's important for people to realize that this is something that you can help them with.
Yeah, it's such a common reason of consultation, migraines. And it's, I get all the time, where have you been in the last 20 years of my life? Because we can help them through that. It's something that's, there are so many different types of migraines. We can have 10 patients in front of us and have 10 different types of migraine, because again, the Chinese medicine looks at the whole person. So we do a complete evaluation to know what type of migraines they are and help treat them. They're all very different points and approaches to all.
And if you use me as an example for chronic pain, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. I had the wrist issue, and the fact that I guess it was a buildup of many years of doing martial arts and doing push-ups and all that sort of stuff. And then I had this chronic pain in my wrist that wouldn't go away. And I tried physio and all that kind of stuff, and nothing was making it go away. And then, boom, did the acupuncture. And yes, it took several sessions for things to sort of get going. But what did that do for me? Like, what did it, I guess, address in the fact that, you know, physiotherapy couldn't deal with it, and neither could, you know, regular medicine?
It's not that physiotherapy wouldn't be able to treat it. It's just that there are certain things that will react better with one aspect of medicine. So for in your case with the acupuncture, your blockage was locally in the wrist, for example. So we have many meridians that go through the wrist. So it was to get the chi flowing in those meridians. And as soon as we were able to get that, that's where the pain will release.
Joining us on the show again is Stephanie Binet, acupuncturist from Clinic Holistic Zen in Montreal. Is there an age limit to who you can or can't treat, Stephanie?
No, we see anybody from newborns to older.
Okay. senior citizens?
I'm sorry?
Senior citizens?
Yes, senior citizens.
Okay.
There are no ages, and people often ask, do I have to believe in it to have results? And just the proof that we are able to efficiently treat children or even animals in the veterinary world just goes to show that they don't know what I'm doing to them. They're sleeping through most of their treatments. So just goes to show that you don't need to believe for the treatment to be there.
And something else I wanted to address in something that you mentioned just a bit before, in the fact that, you know, if someone sort of has their arm hanging off because they've broken it, whatever, you know, that's something that obviously needs to be handled, I guess, with a splint or whatever. But is there something that you can do to help them? I think you mentioned, you know, inflammation and helping to deal with that.
Yes, absolutely. So the actual pain that comes from having, for example, a broken shoulder, They can't do anything. They have a hard time immobilizing a shoulder, but we'll actually be able to help with pain, help with eventually the mobility. If somebody, I had a patient recently who cut their hand, they were woodworkers, and so we are able to help the speed up the healing and relieve the swelling. A lot of the time there's swelling, and that's something that we are very efficient in.
And if someone actually hurts themselves, you know, playing a sport or even just doing whatever, like yard work around the house, how quickly, you know, should they go to an acupuncturist? Like, does a time factor play a part?
The earliest they can see an acupuncturist, the better. I always leave room for emergencies. We'll always try to see our patients as fast as possible, because the earlier you're in, the faster the response is. Somebody who gets hurt 20 years back, has chronic pain for 20 years, is going to take a few more sessions than somebody who just got hurt the day before.
And with dealing with someone so quickly, Stephanie, what is the, I guess, the factor that helps you get to it? Is it because the injury is so fresh and you can sort of get the meridians going and your needlework in there?
Exactly. But also, if we're talking about the sports injury that you spoke about, I know that there are acupuncturists on, Olympic teams and everything. So if somebody gets injured, the faster we can act, because the body naturally creates an inflammation, a swelling process, which is a natural body's way of healing, we can actually come in and use different techniques to relieve the inflammation and to speed up the healing, because it's normal to have inflammation and swelling. The body sends their little soldiers to heal up the area. So by putting ice, you actually slow that down. If you don't have an acupuncturist on hand, yes, you will want to put ice. But if you do, then we can actually release the swelling. And so nothing is ever stalled in terms of the treatment, and the healing is a lot faster.
I wanted to talk to you actually about the heat and cold situation, because it's funny, for
you're
myself.
You're going to get me in trouble.
A little bit, but I like your stance on this. So, because my question is, for years, you know, I've been in sports my whole life, so I've obviously had some injuries, and, you know, it was always like, go put the ice on. And it was weird, because I do not have a clue, or did not have a clue, about acupuncture and how all of that works. But I just sort of felt internally, like, I already know that I'm a cold person, and the fact that, like, in the winter, I'm cold, my extremities are cold, my feet, my hands. So I've always, you know, much appreciated the heat. But of course, when it came to injuries, everyone was like, Kelly, put cold, put cold, put cold. And then, you know, it was discovered during my treatment that it seems like I'm a hot person, which is what I thought I should be, in the fact that I should be treating myself with heat. Can you explain, I guess, how certain people maybe are like me or not like me?
I can try. Basically, when we meet a patient for the first time, we have a million questions, as you know, to determine what is the medical background, what is the present issues at hand. And so when we look at, for example, a wrist pain or an elbow pain or a back pain, it doesn't matter. But if we look at that pain, there are different types of pain. You can have a sharp pain, you can have a radiating pain, you can have a numbness, you can have a swelling, etc. But when we know if a pain is eased by massage or eased by heat, if something is relieved by heat, to us in Chinese medicine, transfers into cold. It means that if a patient is cold, the cold type of pain, and you put heat on it and it helps, it tells us it's a cold pain. And cold in the body will stagnate, will create blockages, and will create pain. Unless it is inflamed, red, hot to touch, then maybe we'll use cold. But we'll always try to use cooling points instead of ice, for example. Whereas if something is cold to touch, strong pain, the cold will really stagnate and create a strong pain. So then in those times, we always opt for the heat. Heat acts as a conductor. It helps movement. It helps circulation. It helps our meridian flows.
Fantastic. Now, Stephanie, if someone is still sort of fearful or still maybe a skeptic, you know, but they are dealing with chronic pain or some kind of pain, should they still try it, you know, anyway, acupuncture?
Yes, absolutely. We, in those cases, I never want to scare off, for example, children. Children will come in and parents will have talked to them a little bit about needles, and maybe they're not pro. So at first, instead of scaring them away, I'll just start with laser. We have different tools to use to activate acupuncture points, like we have spoken to about the Moxa. Laser is something that we also use in clinic, so it's completely pain-free. It's the same thing as if the light is opened in your in your office, it's not going to hurt you. They feel absolutely nothing at all. So even in adults, sometimes in their first sessions, for them to just be relaxed and enjoy the treatment, I'll just start with laser. But as soon as I can present to them an actual wire that we can curl them with our fingers, that they're so small, usually patients gain the trust right away.
And I guess what would be a final piece of advice that you would give, again, just to people who, you know, maybe have been struggling with some sort of injury like I was for over a year and was, you know, had no place left to turn?
I say don't be scared. Being an acupuncturist, we're often the last resort. And that's actually the most gratifying part of my job, because when they've been through every single doctor, every other therapist, and then they finally come to me and they're coming backwards because they're scared of needles, and then we fix their issues, that's the best part of my job. Don't be scared. It doesn't hurt. Babies sleep through it. If you have any questions, just contact an acupuncturist near you and speak to them on the phone personally and get a bit more info. Don't be scared.
And Stephanie, I know that you're obviously located, you know, here in Montreal, and some of my listeners are listening worldwide. For them to find a good acupuncturist, like, where should they go? Should they go online and try to find somebody reputable if they don't know anybody by word of mouth?
Yes, there's actually a website, which is the Association des Acupuncteurs du Québec. The website is www.acupuncture-quebec.com. Then they can find an acupuncturist near them.
That's fantastic.
In all of Quebec.
Okay. And if they are in the Montreal area, how can they actually reach you?
My phone number is 514-457-1966, and my name is Stephanie Binet.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Stephanie. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
Again, that is Stephanie Binet, acupuncturist from Clinic Holistic Zen in the West Island of Montreal.
Stand by!
The Love Zone with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
I'm Gina Lee, and today's topic in The Love Zone is about loving you. Are you on the list of people you love? Did you even think to put yourself there? Many of us define ourselves by who we love, but do you love you? Off the bat, many would say, why, yes, of course I love myself. But if you examine the people around you and the habits you engage in, the opposite may be true. The concept of self-love may seem, well, selfish, but it's actually very necessary if you intend to develop and maintain meaningful relationships. I can't be good to you if I'm not good to me, right? Some of us are very good at loving, giving, and caring for others, but have difficulty practicing it on ourselves. A lack of self-love will put you in some messed up situations where love is something to be pursued and earned, not realizing that you must first possess it within yourself. The love that comes to you is a reflection of the love you already have. So how do you practice self-love? Get to know yourself. Make a list of all the things that make you, you. Become conscious of who you are, not what you think you should be. Accept all that you see unconditionally. Never mind the flaws, we all got them. It's what you do in spite of them that matters. You are a work in progress, but in this moment, you are complete. Let that sink in for a bit. Right now, you are complete. Do you believe what I'm telling you? Is there a little voice in your head saying otherwise? The minute we start to analyze ourselves, we start to criticize ourselves, finding fault in a million things, and all that does is distract us from the power we have to transform ourselves and the world around us. There's only room for one in the driver's seat of your mind, so who are you letting take the wheel of your thoughts? You really have to make a conscious decision to live a happy and fulfilled life. So many of us take things as they come, living by default, so to speak, never asking for more nor expecting much in the first place. Just as a flower needs water and sunlight to grow, you have to nurture yourself in every way, expecting the best and believing you deserve it. Wouldn't you want the best for someone you love? Once you start to think positively about yourself, just like that flower, you begin to blossom. And those positive thoughts turn into positive actions that will move you towards the relationships necessary for your growth. When you're in a loving state of mind, you approach life differently. You start to surround yourself with people who complement your outlook and pull away from those who don't. You can't love yourself and be in a relationship where you are treated badly. Those two mindsets can't coexist. You can't attract real love if you don't have real love for yourself. You may attract someone willing to give you real love, but if you don't love yourself, you'll be unable to accept it, and that love won't last. Too many times we sabotage our own happiness because we don't feel we deserve it. Practicing self-love takes practice. You have to be vigilant with your thoughts and actions, always making sure that the things you do and say are positive and conducive to your life goals. It requires you to let go of your fears and self-doubt and to be truthful with yourself on all levels. Trust yourself, forgive yourself, believe in yourself, follow your dreams, find your joy and stay in it. Be the love you want to see, and it will be.
But I learned to love myself unconditionally because
No matter where you work, there are always some obstacles to overcome in the environment. But just because you have to come to terms with certain conditions, it doesn't mean you should put up with a corporate environment that is negative and unhealthy. To give us a good idea of how to handle your work environment and what you should be striving for is marketing expert Monique Reese, who is founder and CEO of Market Smarter and author of the book, Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth, How to Use Social Media, Measure Marketing, and Create a Culture of Execution. Monique, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I wanted to ask you to set the scene for our conversation about corporate culture. Can you please tell us about the Goldman Sachs employee who wrote a scathing resignation letter and actually sent it off to the New York Times?
Yes. Greg Smith was an executive director at Goldman Sachs. And it was a public resignation in the New York Times, and it was a pretty scathing letter. He talked about what it was like 12 years ago when he first joined Goldman Sachs, and then what the culture was like today, 12 years later, and why he was leaving. And he really summarized that letter by making a call of action to the board of directors.
And just how important in general is corporate culture for employees? Because I imagine it's not only, you know, to flourish, but just to function in general.
Well, it's critical. It's not just important to employees. It's really important to a company, too. So there's a real simple formula that companies can follow, which is employee happiness equals customer happiness. And if you have those two right, the result is always greater revenues and greater profits. And what happens is a lot of companies will get that backwards. They'll focus on customer satisfaction, but it's really employee satisfaction that needs to be the focus first. Because employees know naturally what to do. And so if companies will focus on making their employees happy, they'll do whatever it takes to make customers happy. So that's really important.
And can you give us some examples, I guess, of, you know, a corporate culture that has gone toxic and destructive?
Other than Goldman Sachs, you know what? I would answer that question by saying, because this happens in almost every talk I give on company culture, is that when we talk about the topic in a group of people, almost every person in an audience can relate to some sort of a toxic work culture, which is really a shame. But almost everybody has had that experience of working for a really bad boss or working in a corporate environment that it may not have been like Goldman Sachs, but they were miserable when they were working there. And so there's plenty of companies that are out there that can improve.
Overall, if the employees are unhappy, this obviously has to affect business and ultimately the bottom line.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's a direct correlation between a great company culture and business results. So a company culture has everything to do with profitability. Research proves, I'll give you some facts, that in companies with a great corporate culture, revenues grow 4 times faster, stock prices grow 12 times faster, profits were 750% higher, and customer satisfaction doubled. So those are some pretty big numbers. And then there's other things, too, that drop directly to the bottom line, such as higher productivity, there's reduced employee turnover, a company spends less on marketing, and they usually have a much more powerful brand image in the marketplace as a result of their company culture. So all of those things point to all of the business reasons behind why a company would want to focus on company culture. But it really starts with the CEO. The CEO really has to decide that company culture is really important to its employees, its customers, shareholders, and other stakeholders in the organization, and then make a concerted effort to create that sort of a healthy, thriving culture.
And Monique, is part of the problem, let's say, with corporate culture, the fact that some of these companies are massive and the CEO might not even be in the same building as, you know, the rest of the employees? And it just gets out of control. Like it just, you know, the CEO does not understand what his regular day employees are going through.
Yes, that's usually the case. The CEO oftentimes does not know what the frontline employees are going through. But they don't actually have to be in a building. I'll give you a good example. If you look at Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, well, he lives and works in Seattle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet he's got stores all over the world. And Starbucks has an amazing company culture. So he doesn't have to be there, but he makes it the most important thing in the company. So he stays focused on it, and then he makes sure that he has a senior leadership team that absolutely believes in it. And then that healthy company culture filters top down. So it always flows top down. Eventually it comes, you know, bottom up as well, but it really has to start at the top. And so the CEO has got to believe in it and make sure that his leadership team believes in it, his or her leadership team believes in it. Otherwise, it all falls apart.
And obviously, this is something that is capable of being done because of your example of, you know, Starbucks. And obviously, there's other companies that know how to treat their employees well. Why do you think that certain companies do get out of hand? Is it because the CEO might have started off with good intentions, and then, you know, as you have to hire more and more middle management, it just gets, you know, out of control, and then no one's really monitoring, you know, middle management down? Because I sometimes find that is the problem. Middle management is where I feel like you get sometimes managers where it's like a high school popularity contest as to who is going to be doing well in the building or not. And then it's right. Just, it's such a toxic environment.
Yeah, exactly. Kelly, it could be mid-level managers. Oftentimes it's the senior leadership. It might be the senior most leadership, or it could be a level down in a really large organization. And that it's because that senior leadership team has to model the kind of behavior that they want to see in other people. So if they're not modeling the right behavior, then they can't expect their direct reports and their teams and divisions and that sort of thing to actually have the kind of behavior that they want to see.
Joining us on the show is marketing expert Monique Reese. Check her out at marketsmarter.com. I almost find it sort of mind-boggling, Monique, in the fact that you just gave out these, you know, facts that are, you know, solid facts about productivity and sort of work environment and corporate culture. And it seems, you know, a very easy mathematical situation to put together. So I find it kind of mind-boggling in the fact that, you know, you would think in this day and age, with the fact that so many people are trying to take better care of themselves, you know, by eating right, going to the gym, all that kind of stuff. We're in an environment now where you're trying to take care of yourself, but then at work, companies are not taking care of the overall health of their employees. So, you know, their productivity goes south.
Right. Yeah, it's really a shame. It's something that has to be, you know, consistently focused on. Otherwise, what happens is, you know, when you don't focus on company culture, it begins to flounder, and the company culture really becomes something that can head south pretty quick. So it needs a constant tension and focus and certain programs in order to keep a healthy, thriving culture in place. And I agree with you, Kelly. It's amazing that there's more, that not more companies actually pay attention to this, because there's so much research that's done on it, and there's so many reasons that point to just the business case for why there should be a healthy company culture. You know, never mind the fact that it just makes common sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think there's companies that are starting to wake up to this and starting to change. But you know, creating a thriving, healthy culture sounds easy. It sounds simple, but it's remarkably hard to execute on a consistent basis sometimes.
Can you sort of give us some ideas as to, I guess, maybe what programs should be put in place, what monitoring systems should be put in place to make sure that this corporate culture, you know, if you do have it healthy, that it stays that way?
That's a good question. You know, there's lots of different kinds of programs that can be put into place. First of all, you've got to make sure that you're hiring the right people. Because if the right people are not hired, like the middle managers you were just referring to in the popularity contest, if the right people aren't hired, then nothing else you put in place will work. But the first thing that a company can do is focus on their core values. So this isn't something that is one of those statements, you know, we believe in trust and honesty and integrity, that's drafted by a senior leadership team. It's really something that needs to be drafted, shared with other employees, and then getting feedback from all of the other employees in the organization so that they agree. I hate the word buy-in, but they understand and buy into that those are the values that we want to live by in our company. And then there needs to be the further explanation of those core values. For example, what does it mean to live those core values? So if integrity is a core value, then what does it mean to be integrity or to have integrity? They need to give examples of what that would look like in the day-to-day work environment. So that kind of thing has to stay alive and well and modeled by the senior leadership every day. And then I would say, secondly, it's really important to put in place, make sure that all employees in an organization understand what the purpose, you know, the overarching purpose of the company is. What's their, not just their values, but what's the overall vision and mission of the company? And again, those should not be trite little sentences that hang on a wall somewhere, but something that's actively talked about every single day. Howard Schultz says that people want to work for a company that they believe in and that they trust. And it needs to be, you know, the purpose of a company has to be about something much more than just making money. So, however, you know, of course that's important, otherwise the company won't exist, but the company has to find another way to communicate where they're going, why they're going there, and then how they're going to get there. And so an internal communication plan and program is critically important in a company. So those are a couple of the things that tend to move the lever the most and most consistently. So those are a couple of things. And then there's other programs that can be put in place to improve employee engagement and retention, rewards and recognition programs. You know, one of the things that I see all the time that astounds me is that companies rarely ask their employees for the solution to a problem. So before they run out and hire a consultant to do it, they should actually ask their employees. Or the consultant should facilitate asking employees, because employees always have all kinds of answers and great ways of doing things. It's just that they're not asked, or there's not a way to get that information to the senior leaders in the company.
Monique, in your opinion, how important is it to have a solid human resources department in the company? Because, you know, I've seen too many examples where it seems that the human resources department is there to protect, you know, middle or upper management, and the employee feels like they have no place to go.
Yeah, you know what? That's an interesting insight, because I would say that company culture doesn't necessarily belong in the HR department. It, you know, it really varies. And that's one of those things where it's such a new topic, you know, even though there's a ton of research on it, it's a fairly new topic that people are talking about. And so sometimes it goes in the HR department, sometimes it goes to marketing. In a company like Zappos, they say everybody owns culture. So I think it's pretty dangerous to put it into an HR department. And you're right. I think that, you know, depending on the company and the industry, some, you know, the HR department might be tasked with the legal regulations of an organization. I heard someone once say that the job of the HR department is to keep the CEO out of jail. an interesting comment. But they're usually focused on regulations, maybe employee recognition programs, things like that. But it really does not get to the heart of the company culture, which is the core values, how are we going to live them, the communication of the vision and the strategy around that vision, where are we going and why and how are we going to get there, and then bringing that down to an individual department and an individual and to each individual so that they understand their role in making sure that that vision and strategy are actually executed.
I really think it's important that you mention the part that you just have been talking about, the fact of these core values and actually living by the words that are on the wall, because I've seen that too, where it's like this, that, and the other thing, and the company is a mess inside. Like, the employees are unhappy. They never know if they're the next one to be axed. Like, it just seems like sometimes those are just words on a wall.
Oftentimes. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes back to company culture, something that everybody has an experience with, and certainly we all do as consumers. If we're standing in a long line and they look over and see a mission statement hanging on a wall that say, you know, we treat our customers well and they're so important to us, and then, you know, that's just not your experience of it. So I think most of us have had that kind of an experience at some point. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people have those every week, mm-hmm. you know, and so the way to fix that is, again, by focusing on really creating happy employees.
Do you think sometimes, Monique, that the CEO and upper management is out of touch? Because sometimes I wonder that, in the fact that, you know, they're bringing in honking salaries, you know, they've got benefits left, right and center. And it's almost like I feel like they're an elite group and the little guy, you know, really isn't a concern except for the fact that they better be producing. So big buddy keeps getting his salary.
Right. I think that's the whole Occupy Wall Street movement right now. There's a lot of that sentiment going on, and which makes it all the more reason for senior leaders in a company to, you know, begin to pay attention to how their employees feel and what they're doing to really create a great environment for them.
And I just wanted to ask you as well, you know, there's been a show on TV the last couple of years, Undercover Boss, and I kind of get sort of sucked into watching it because I often feel like that is everyone's existence, in the fact that if they work for a company, you know, a lot of times they're a little voice and they don't get heard because, you know, big man in the corner office doesn't have a clue.
Right. Yeah, that's most often the case, is, you know, especially for the people that are on the front line working with customers. Or it might be people that are in a warehouse responsible for getting products to a customer. You know, if they're not brought into the fold and into conversations and made to feel just as important as any other executive in the company, then things will fall apart. Then you've got a situation like, you know, it spirals out of control, like, well, you know, Greg Smith actually sounded like a great employee, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was one of 10 people selected out of 30,000 to appear in a recruiting video for Goldman Sachs. And, you know, he was, and this is usually what happens, is some of the best employees will end up leaving. So I hope that show actually is a wake-up call for a lot of CEOs as well as senior executives in the company to start paying attention and starting to put some of the programs in place to get feedback from employees throughout an organization.
Yeah, because sometimes I feel, Monique, as well, like I'll use an example that I have, in the fact that my job as being a radio announcer, I often have the honor or the pleasure to interview celebrities. And I always find, once I interview the celebrity, it's almost always a positive experience. It's the getting to the celebrity that's the problem. Like their managers, their publicists, their hangers-on are the ones that are more difficult. Once you get to the actual person, like the experience is usually great. And I kind of find that the same way in a work environment, or, you know, reading stories, reading articles, you know, like an employee might have a comment or a good idea, but to get that to the actual boss, it just doesn't filter through because other management or senior, you know, colleagues don't let it happen.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there, again, it goes back to the CEO has to actually put some of the, you know, mechanisms in place for employees to be able to come to him or her. So there, for example, there's some companies that will, on their task force, they'll actually put an entry-level employee on that, you know, that rotates through that board on a monthly basis. And that person's responsible for listening and hearing what's going on and actually conveying the real-world view out in the organization back to the CEO. I think it really comes down to the fact that they've got to put the right kind of programs and mechanisms, I call them, in place, so that there's a closed loop, so employees can always feel like they can actually talk with someone that is going to listen, or that they've got the power to actually be able to do something.
Joining us on the show is marketing expert Monique Reese. Check her out at marketsmarter.com. Monique, I wanted to ask you, because I don't want to be just sort of negative Nelly here, I feel like with regards to corporate culture, yes, obviously there's a ton of work that has to go into it to make sure, because it's a living, breathing sort of organism going on within your work environment. But I feel like it can go negative back to positive, back to negative, kind of back and forth, just like an ocean wave. And I'm assuming that it can even sort of happen depending on one or two managers or one or two colleagues that may either be really positive or really negative.
Exactly. So that can be caused by a person, you know, because if you've got a one bad person in a team, or if it happens to be a leader, that's toxic. That's toxic to the culture, and it brings everybody else down. So yes, a company can ebb and flow and go back up and back down in terms of their organizational culture. There's other things that can impact it. For example, a merger. You know, most mergers fail because the companies don't pay attention to how different the company culture is in both different organizations and do things to try to bring that together. So there's all kinds of things that can impact that. But oftentimes it does go right back to a person.
And can you explain why, you know, purpose-driven companies actually are more profitable? Is it because they have like a solid direction as to where they're going?
Well, it's not just the solid direction. So they have, they actually have the intention of doing well in the world. So whether it's a grocery store, you know, a small service company, they could make a widget of some sort, but their role in the world they view as bigger than making money. And being purpose-driven also can be, we want to treat our employees and our customers right. And that, and some companies extend that actually to 5 different shareholders where they say we're going to treat all of our extended employees right. We're going to treat our customers, employees, vendors, suppliers, shareholders, all the same. And so that kind of a company tends to be much more purpose-driven. And I'll give you an example. Zappos is my favorite poster child for culture. And, you know, it's Tony Hsieh loves to say that Zappos is a company that's powered by service. And they just happen to be an online retailer that sells shoes and clothes and other stuff. And they really live and breathe that every single day in their company culture. And it doesn't make any difference who you talk to, call center agent, someone in a warehouse, a senior leader, everybody treats everybody with the same amount of respect. It's really pretty awesome.
And what are your key pieces of advice, whether it's to an actual, you know, employee, like frontline level, like you mentioned, or even to companies who need to fix their corporate culture or their outlook, let's say if it's the frontline employee, you know, if it's failing?
Well, I think there's a couple different answers to that. I think if a employee is in a really toxic environment and they are working for a CEO that clearly does not get it, my experience is that the company culture has little chance of turning around. Now, on the other side of that, I would say if there's, you know, pockets of discontent in the company, I mean, that's pretty normal. I would say focus on what you can impact. So start in your own department and create a great team environment. Then have that filter up to the division or business unit that you might work in. And what happens is other divisions and other people in the company then start to take notice of that. And all of a sudden that division starts to attract some of the best employees. And that's what starts to happen when, if a company wants to change from the bottom up, which is possible, it's just really difficult to do. But absolutely, I would say focus on what you can try to impact and focus on creating a great environment for yourself and your team every day.
And with the importance that has been put on social media in the last several years, and, you know, it seems like it's a great tool for so many different industries, you know, myself included being, you know, on the radio, we use it all the time, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, all that kind of stuff. Is there a way to use social media to help change your corporate culture or to maybe breathe some life into the employees and make you feel like, I feel like you need to feel like you're a part of a team?
Yeah, I think social media can be used, you know, if a company lets all of their employees use Twitter, for example, that says that they trust them. I mean, as long as they're putting some guidelines in place, then I think that they can use that to create an even stronger company culture. But there's also a lot of companies that are using social media to, you know, to be a support tool to help them improve customer service and to be a reflection of their company culture and their company brand. So they might have customer service teams on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, excuse me. That sort of thing. And that really helps.
And where can people actually get a copy of your book? Because I feel like it could really sort of open some eyes and get people paying attention to the fact that their work environment should be a fun place to go.
Yes. Thanks for asking. It's on the homepage of marketsmarter.com. And there's also a link there to go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other stores as well.
Fantastic. Monique, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. It was my pleasure.
That's marketing expert Monique Reese, again, who is founder and CEO of Market Smarter and author of the book Real-Time Marketing for Business Growth, How to Use Social Media, Measure Marketing, and Create a Culture of Execution. Check her out, marketsmarter.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, a big thank you going out to my two guests this week, including Stephanie Binette, as well as Monique Reese. I really appreciated their time. I want to leave you with your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Robert Half. Hard work without talent is a shame, but talent without hard work is a tragedy. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.